support you on your academic journey, the Student Learning Commons has got your back. The Student Learning Commons is SFU's Academic Success Center. We provide free workshops, one-on-one consultations, coaching, and online tutoring with a focus on writing, study skills, and academic English. All Student Learning Commons programs and services are available to SFU students and are approved by SFU as providing ethical, academically honest support. Learn more by visiting our locations in the library on all three SFU campuses, or check us out online at learningcommons.sfu.ca.
Hi, my name is Taku. I want to say shout out to all the raccoons on campus. You're listening to CGSF 90.1 FM on Burnaby.
Welcome to Scream Therapy. I'm your host, Jason Schurz. In October of 2018, I found myself in the hospital, sitting across from a psychiatrist who was telling me I had bipolar. I was sent home with a bunch of medication and laid on the couch for a week. I had my iTunes library on shuffle, trying to shake the hornet's nest from my head. Ever since I was a kid, I've been using loud music as a form of therapy. Punk rock and mental health have always been connected. This podcast looks at that connection through the lens of different guests. This is Scream Therapy. Giving back to your community has always been an integral part of the punk scene. When Nicole Morales of Hit Like a Girl formed an organization to help trans people in need, it was a logical extension of playing in punk bands and putting on all-ages shows. As a non-binary person, Nicole says punk has been a place where they could be their authentic self. It's also been a training ground for No More Dysphoria, an organization which has helped trans people access hormones and funding for surgery. For people like Nicole, the need to help has come naturally, and the work they do has contributed to their own mental health.
My name is Nicole Morales. My pronouns are they and them. I play in a band called Hit Like a Girl. I'm currently located in Philadelphia, and my journey with mental health is an ongoing one. I feel like everybody's journey is never ending. I feel like a lot of my past life experiences have led me to where I am now, and I didn't have a lot of resources growing up to access mental health care, and I kind of had to learn how to pivot and find solutions to everyday world problems a little bit on my own. And then as I got older, I started finding my community within music and within DIY and going to shows and stuff. And that's where I started to meet people and started to build a community, find support. And that's sort of how I also learned that it's like okay to feel your feelings. Whereas, you know, I grew up in around a lot of toxic masculinity and was forced to suppress everything, whereas punk rock really gives you an outlet to feel your feelings, let things out, and talk to your community and find support that way. So that was really helpful, and I think punk rock kind of saved my life in that regard.
Yeah, it's a common phrase on this podcast. every time I hear it, it gives me shivers because it's so true. And obviously some people talk metaphorically and some people talk literally about kids saving their lives. Do you remember the first time that you got into punk rock? You talked about going to shows and DIY spaces. Do you remember that moment where you're like, hey, wait a second, this is something that I can latch onto?
Yeah, for sure. I grew up in North New Jersey. So the first show I went to was at this old DIY venue in Montclair called Bloomfield Ave Cafe. It's unfortunately not there anymore, but my friend and I found this show posting on MySpace and begged her dad to drive us. It was like very eye-opening. I was just like, wow, this is cool, because I've always felt like a bit of a black sheep and I couldn't really figure out why I felt so different from everybody around me. So being in a room full of other weirdos was just probably the most validating experience I've ever had. And I was just like high off of it. And I was like, I want more of this. So I just started digging into where can I find more local shows. And once you start meeting bands and kids in DIY bands, it's a lot easier to just follow them along and see where they're playing and go to the VFWs and stuff. And I was about 16, I think, when I went to that first show.
Yeah, the word weirdo is like, that's something that also comes up a lot. And I know I felt like that when I was a kid too, and going to these punk shows and realizing, hey, wait a second, there are other folks that are wearing these band t-shirts and these clothes and they're wearing makeup and they're wearing, you know, like it's a whole immediate connection
totally.
To other people and something that wasn't really available to me in a big way previously. But it was overwhelming to see all these folks that were like, this is something that is shared by so many people. Like they know these weird, obscure bands that I know and they're into like dancing wild and stuff. You went to punk shows starting in your teens and that's a great relief to be able to express yourself and, you know, look at these bands and say, hey, maybe I can do that myself or just be inspired by them and the energy of them. What were you doing before that when you didn't have that outlet? Were you still listening to music or were you doing other things?
Yeah, for sure. I was always listening to music. I was just trying to figure out how to be in a band as a kid. I don't know. I had a friend growing up who would get, who was privileged enough to get like private in-home drum lessons. And I would go hang out with her. And as her brother was getting these drum lessons, I would eavesdrop and like listen. And eventually they started to like catch on that I was doing that. So they would like invite me to sit in on the lessons, which was really fun. So the first time I got to like sit behind the kit, I'll never forget it. I was like, oh, this is electrifying. Like, this is so cool. And then in middle school, I had a friend that like kind of knew how to play guitar and I had a friend that kind of knew how to play drums. And they were like, we should start a band. We need a bass player. And I was like, okay, I'll figure out how to play bass. And I got someone to let me borrow one and we all met up to have like a little band practice and we learned Damn It by Blink-182 and then never played ever again. You know what I mean? So I was always just trying to figure out how to play music in some capacity in one way or another. And then when I started going to shows, you know, a lot of people would always say, oh, if you want to do this, just do it. Just be in a band and you could play the here too, you know, things like that. And that really resonated with me because it was just like, oh, I could do that too. Okay, I'm going to try and do that too.
So many bands that were formed or pushed to play their very first show. Like I do a lot of promoting. It's like there's young folks that are starting up playing instruments. Okay, I want to book you for a show. It's going to be in March, go, right? And then they're sort of pressured to put on, to play a show. Even
push, you got to push the bird out of the nest, you know? I book bands too, and a lot of it is, yeah, very much so like that. It's just like, if you want to do the thing, like, I know it sounds ridiculous, but you just got to do the thing.
Yeah. And it's an environment that welcomes and promotes that too.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
There's no gatekeeping around punk rock and playing punk rock on the floor of some gallery and just screaming with your friends. You know, it's not like you have to pass a test or whatever.
Yeah, seriously. It's the most cathartic thing in the world.
So when you didn't have that and, you know, you're just listening to music and expressing yourself in different ways, how is that different than when you got involved with the scene? I know for me, when I wasn't involved in a scene, it was sort of stuck in my town, only able to listen to music. It was very isolating and I kind of felt like I was the only one doing it, even though it was happening in other places. And that really affected my mental health.
Yeah, I definitely used to like write a lot of poetry, which have all since evolved into lyrics. But the internet, I feel like, was a good big place for me. Tumblr, for example, finding little like sub threads of like people with similar interests and things. And I had so many random internet friends, I guess, that have since become real life friends to this day. And then when I was younger, I would hang out at the mall and hang out with kids that were older than me that were all wearing like trip pants and like smoking cigarettes. And I was like, these kids are cool. I guess I was always looking for the weird people without even realizing it. You know what I mean? Because I feel like they just get it. My family and a lot of people I grew up around were all so conservative. So I just like never felt like I like fit in or belonged anywhere near my immediate circle. So yeah, I feel like I was constantly looking for people wearing all black.
I do crisis responding for youth, and a lot of youth call in who are dealing with identity, and especially the relationships they have with their families and mm-hmm. how they feel like they're being either misunderstood or abused in a lot of ways.
Or forced to fit in some box.
Exactly. Being non-binary, you've probably dealt with those issues when you're younger too.
Oh, for sure.
I can't give them advice. That's not part of my role. But from your own experience, how did you cope with those issues when you were younger?
Yeah, my mom definitely tried to like force me to wear dresses, and she like made my room all pink and was just like always trying to like doll me up to be this daughter that she's always wanted. Because like I said, I have two brothers, so she just always wanted me to be that daughter, and I always pushed back. And you know, that felt bad. I felt bad for hurting her feelings, but at the same time, she was trying to force me to be somebody that I wasn't. I grew up resenting her, I guess, in a way for that. And I think the only way you can really cope is to find some sort of creative outlet that really speaks to you, where you can like place all those feelings and thoughts and things. You know, I used to like draw when I was a kid. I've always written poetry. Like you said, you can't give anybody advice, but, and it sounds like such a cliche, but it really is true when they say like things do get better in time. Like time really is the only thing that heals anything. And therapy is amazing. I think everybody should go to therapy, which I understand is also very hard to access when you're a kid, which just speaks to a lot of greater issues that's wrong with the world. But I think journaling and finding some sort of creative outlet to let out all those emotions and feelings that you don't know where else to place, finding friends to talk to, and finding places to reach out, and being patient and believing that things do eventually get better as you get older, because then you have the autonomy to go find the resources that you weren't able to access as a kid.
What were the circumstances or situations that allowed you to come out, or what was the impetus of you being able to be truly open with yourself and others?
Well, I started getting tattooed when I was 14, and when I was 15, I got a rainbow tattoo, and I thought I was going to be slick and hide it from my mom, and she found it and was like, "What's that?" And I was like, "What do you think it is?" So I guess in a way I was forced out, but it is kind of like, okay, well, in a way it was relieving, because I was like, I don't have to carry this huge, heavy burden on my chest anymore. It's out there. And now I guess all there is really to do is learn how to live with it. And it's true what they say, you come out every day, you know, you never really ever stop. I think you just eventually, it's like any other habit that you have every day, right? You wake up, you do your hair, you brush your teeth, you put clothes on, you get ready, and you go out the door. I feel like being okay with who you truly are, and in a sense coming out every day, is sort of falls into that similar routine. Wake up, brush your teeth, you come out, you put your clothes on, and you go out the door. It's just all part of it now, you know, so you just really get used to it.
I love that.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great way of putting it.
Yeah.
What was the support you got from the people in the punk scene?
I mean, when I was a kid, I was going to a lot of hardcore shows, and at the time, it was like a boys club, so, you know, anytime a girl would ever mosh, I feel like people would raise an eyebrow at it or, like, make fun of them or whatever, and then girls started fronting bands, and people would make fun of them, and it was just, like, very much a male-dominated scene for a little bit, and then once girls and women started finding the voice to, like, clap back, I feel like that's when things started to become more inclusive. I'll never forget this person threw a fest in New Jersey called Not Just a Boys Club. And it was like a couple years in a row. And it was just like all bands that were fronted by non-men. And I was just like, oh, that's allowed? You could do that? Like, this is a thing? And then, yeah, when women started like speaking up and being like, women to the front, hearing all those phrases, I was just like, that's awesome. And that's when I think I started to feel a little more included when it was still like very much so a boys club, it didn't really feel all that comforting. And then once I started gravitating more towards the indie emo scene, that's when I was just like exposed to like different genders and things like that. And I didn't realize that was allowed. A lot of eye-opening experiences going to shows and being exposed to a lot of things, because the high school I went to, it was mostly conservative white people. There's maybe like 5 black people in my graduating class. You know what I mean? It was just like not a lot of diversity or culture or anything interesting for that matter. So yeah, going to shows was where I was exposed to a lot of diversity. And yeah, it was awesome.
Do you remember a band that your eyes really lit up and you saw yourself in them, or you really felt empowered by a certain band?
Yeah, this old band from Baltimore called Claw. Oh, they were so good. I think they're still playing music, but yeah, it was just like trans women in the band, and the front person was like head to toe covered in tattoos. And I was just like, oh yeah, it was like looking in a mirror. I was like, this is so cool.
Yeah. How did that feel?
It was like I said, at first it was like, that's allowed. You're allowed to do that. It was cool. And then a couple years later, I booked a show at the Meat Locker in Montclair and got them to play. And it just felt like a really cool full circle moment, you know?
Totally. Were you playing in punk and hardcore bands along that way, or were you doing mostly the show booking stuff?
When I was a kid, I did singer-songwriter stuff by myself. Even still to this day, just have always had a hard time like connecting with people who want to be in a band to the same level that I do. Have you ever like heard the saying, find something you love and let it kill you? I feel like that's how being in a band is for me. Like I work 3 jobs so that I can afford to go on tour, and I try to tour as many times a year as I can and play as many shows as I possibly can without burning out. So a lot of people don't want to live their life like that. So it's a lot more difficult to find permanent band members who want to be as insane about it as I am.
Yeah.
So in high school, I was in a Riot Girl band that never left the garage. You know what I mean? Like I wasn't... Hit Like a Girl's the only band that has been able to like go anywhere because I said so.
Yeah, you made it happen.
Yeah.
Can you tell me about the organization that you founded, No More Dysphoria?
Yeah. No More Dysphoria started in about 2015, 2016. It was me and Alex Dobrowolski, who plays drums in a band called Sunrot, who are still currently active. We had a friend at the time who initially thought of the idea. She has since stepped back from being involved in the organization just because she lives more stealthy and she didn't want people to like figure out that she was trans. But she came up with the idea. She told it to us and we were like, oh, this is cool. This should absolutely be a thing. Since you don't feel safe moving forward with it, do you mind if we take this vision and bring it to life? She was like, yeah, absolutely. I like to say that the nonprofit functions like a band would. If a nonprofit could be a band, No More Dysphoria would be a band. So we started making t-shirts and we sold them at shows and we would table at other people's shows. So we would just like find bands that would let us come hang out at the show and set up and distribute resources and sell shirts. And that was like our primary source of funding at the time. And then things just started to escalate and grow and develop, and we were able to secure a little funding and just progress from there. But it's still mostly me running the show, and it's the same thing. It kind of just runs like a DIY band because that's really all I know. So we're still selling merch and we throw punk shows, and the idea of it is to showcase queer and trans and non-binary artists and give them the platform and the space to perform, because oftentimes those artists get overlooked when bigger bands and booking agencies and tours are coming through town because they all want to book an all dude white band that has 10,000 followers. You know what I mean? So I like to try to showcase cool queer music at the No More Dysphoria shows. And yeah, we've been doing that kind of biannually at this point. And it's like very direct. So if people email me and they're like, hey, I need $100 for hormones because I messed up my insurance this month, I'm just like, okay, here you go. There's no application. There's no jump through hoops to get funding from us. We just believe you and give it to you.
Well, it's sort of like we talked about earlier, the gatekeeping of punk rock versus the gatekeeping of nonprofit fundraising.
Yeah. At first, I used to worry, like, with that ethos, it's really easy for someone to just, like, lie to me and take money from us. But then I try not to let that be the forefront of my decision making, because truly, at the end of the day, if someone's to do that to me, then karma will get them. So I just take everyone for their word and believe it.
Yeah. And people that are in need and comfortable emailing you are the ones that are going to be legit, because why else would you sit down and do it? It'd be a lot of effort to, you know.
Exactly.
What kind of a person would want to take money away from folks who are struggling and folks who need help and folks who can't afford, whether it's surgery or whether it's just, like you said, hormones or just living expenses for a lot of people too.
Yeah, for sure.
They get kicked out of their house and then they need to live.
Definitely. We try to prioritize queer, trans people of color too, as often as we can, just because obviously they live so disproportionately underprivileged comparatively. So
has there been a success story that you've been able to track?
Yeah. My favorite success story for the organization is healthcare is cheaper in other countries. That's definitely not a secret. So someone from Puerto Rico reached out expressing that he wanted to get top surgery, and it's a lot cheaper there than it is in the States. So we were able to fund his entire top surgery off the bat. Cool. So that was really cool. But it is a big, amazing feat. But also, if that was in America, there's just like no way we would be able to afford to do that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. So gender dysphoria, from what I've read and what I've heard from friends that, you know, have experienced it, is very much tied to mental health. How do you see that? And from the folks that you've dealt with, how does it affect mental health to be in a state where you're not comfortable with yourself and feeling as though something is not how it should be?
Yeah, I guess it's hard to put into words how it feels to live in a world or in a society that actively works so hard to erase you. It's really hard to put into words how it feels to like live day to day not being your truest, most authentic self. And it really is a shame that anybody ever has to live that way. So any small thing I can do to help someone just feel 1% more comfortable in their own body is something I definitely want to do, because that is the worst feeling in the world, just living in shame or hiding or whatever it is. And no one should have to live like that, especially like in today's political climate where trans people are literally under attack every day. And it's no secret that statistically right now, I feel like any trans person you talk to probably just lives with a little bit of weight on their chest from the stress of the political climate right now.
Yeah. Thinking back to when you were young and first discovering punk rock, do you remember how it felt to be exposed to that scene? And also, how do you look back now and realize there was organizations like No More Dysphoria and places that could help you with things you're struggling with, whether it was mental health or identity? How would that have looked for you? I mean, like, I'm imagining a lot of young people are contacting you for help as well.
Yeah. I don't know. That's such a good question. If there was more organizations at the time when I was younger, like I said, I just didn't have access to a lot of resources and things. So if I was exposed to that when I was younger, I feel like that would have been like such a game changer. You know, eventually I found my way, but it took years, and, you know, it took years of believing that I never would. So if I was exposed to those things at a younger age, I definitely probably would have like grew up with like a little bit more hope, you know? So that would have been awesome. So yeah, I do think it's really important and powerful when, not even just like to toot my own horn, but like when other bands too, like uplift organizations and nonprofits at their shows. Do you know, I'm sure you do. Do you know Punk Rock Saves Lives?
Yeah.
Yeah. They're like always on tours.
They were on the podcast a couple of years ago.
I believe that. Yeah. So, you know, they're always at a show because bands always just invite them to their shows or their tours or whatever. This band Foxing a couple years ago did this entire like outreach thing on their tour where a local organization or two in every city on their tour, they invited to like come to the show and like table. And I feel like that's a good way to like get those organizations in front of their communities. They invited No More Dysphoria to the Philly show of that tour too, which was really cool because we got to go on stage and talk about the organization to 1,200 people. And I was just like, oh my God. I work at that venue now. So it's like a really cool full circle moment. But it's important for bands to be giving those organizations the space to do that.
And I see the punk rock scene as being, in some ways, a handhold. You know, it's a way to welcome people into a scene, but there has to be somewhere to go from there, because mm-hmm. going to shows is great and you learn stuff from the bands, but there has to be some sort of activism piece that will...
Definitely.
Because the whole point of punk rock is that it's supposed to be that, but there needs to be a tangible way of doing it.
Think about the etiquette of a mosh pit or a circle pit. Like, if somebody falls, you pick them up. How many times do you see, like, hordes of people, like, swarm this one person that's fallen just to, like, lift them back up, you know? So that within itself is just so beautiful. And imagine if society just functioned that way in general.
Yeah, I always say that you should, if you don't understand the mosh pit, you should watch from a balcony and you'll get the message.
Oh, yeah, for sure. I know it looks like everyone's killing each other, but it's all out of love.
That was my conversation with Nicole Marolis of Hit Like a Girl, hitlikeagirl.bandcamp.com. For more episodes of Screen Therapy, go to screentherapyhq.com or wherever you listen to podcasts. The Screen Therapy book is available now. Screen Therapy, A Punk Journey Through Mental Health, tells my story and the stories of others who use punk as a catalyst for mental health. Like this podcast, it links the community-minded punk scene with the mental wellness of the punks who belong to it. To order the book, go to screentherapyhq.com. For merch, check out screentherapy.threadless.com. Okay, enough promoting. It's time for some thanking. Thank you for listening to Screen Therapy. Doing this podcast and talking to folks about punk rock and mental health has been a crucial part of my own mental stability, and it means so much to me that you're out there listening. Screen Therapy is created in the Cathet region of coastal British Columbia, Canada, on the traditional territory of the Klahaman Nation. Contact me at screentherapyhq.com or email me at screentherapypodcast@gmail.com. I'd love to hear from you. Let's talk about punk rock and mental health. Until next time, take care and be well.
Hi, this is Towers, and you're listening to CJSF 90.1 FM in Burnaby, BC. Diverse, independent, yours.
George Garcia loves making things. For several years, he worked at the Chicago Public Library Maker Lab, helping people learn to build their own creations.
When I got curious about birds, it was around technology at first. There was this tool that I used called the Finch Robot. With the Finch Robot, I was teaching teachers how to teach kids how to code.
George could program the little bird-shaped bot to sing, light up, or drive along a path. And that got him thinking about a new kind of challenge.
I knew that a finch was a bird, but I didn't know what kind of bird it was. And so I got curious to know if I could find a finch around my neighborhood.
George did indeed find finches, as well as a welcoming community of bird enthusiasts.
It was around this time that I was thinking about how I could use my skills in helping people make things and create a space where people can explore how they can promote healthier environments and richer biodiversity.
Today, that space is the Windy City Bird Lab, a community science group he founded that's inventing new tools to study urban birds.
At our core, our mission is to bring awareness to birds in Chicago using technology, but also bringing together these folks with different skill sets to be able to create new ways of advocating for birds.
Learn more about George's new tech creations for bird conservation in the latest season of Bring Birds Back, available in your favorite podcast app. For Bird Note, I'm Mark Bramhill.